You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 1.
Any turkey dump type situations going on out there that we need to know about?
Yeah, Rasmus Sandin got turkey dumped.
Yeah, he got the turkey dump. But I, you know what? Not that he deserved it. It's the right move. It's the right move.
Yeah. He was starting to get a little bit overwhelmed in his own zone. And being on the third pairing, it's like, go down there and...
And guess what?
Play 25 minutes a night. Turkey dump.
But he's not. But gone he deserved for the year.
It. He got turkey dumped.
But he
not that he deserved it. He should go down.
He can come back in 2 weeks. Like that's the thing. Like it's not. They've got the luxury to flip him up and down. Wouldn't surprise me too. There's some cap issue. Like Gravel's at 700. Like
I think. Well, Dermott's coming back.
Right.
Sooner than later.
Right. Like you just. I don't mind it. This is we saw Cali. I'm not going to suggest that. Sandin is Callie Rosen, but remember Rosen a couple years ago, first 10 games or coming out of training camp, this guy looked great and that. Sandin's going to be a player, but why not? Just take your time. Let him continue to grow, and the Leafs will be fine without him. I actually think that Justin Hull, Babs is starting to at least grow on him a little bit.
Yeah, he's been okay.
Like that's
he's the played
one,
okay.
But that's the one guy, I think, who we didn't factor in one bit at the start of the season, where... Maybe he's gaining some confidence with the coach.
Well, we'll play the Babcock clip in a minute because I think he did a pretty good job of explaining the Sandin situation. I think it's part cap-related, short-term and long-term.
Right.
Like maybe when his first official year of the ELC kicks in.
Yeah.
Although I would expect he will come back at some point this year.
I think he will.
So I don't think they're overly concerned about that. But it's also development-based. And this early in the season... Who's on your third pair is not going to make or break you. So in terms of development, I don't think it's necessarily only about developing him for his career and developing him for next October, where we fully expect he'll be a prominent part of the defense corps because of the turnover that's expected between now and then. It's probably right for development for games in March, April, May, where individual players can make or break.
Yeah, and also development going forward where you don't know where Jake Muzzin and Tyson Barrie are going to be next year. So you might need a guy not just to be a depth guy, but to be an important piece.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's the truth. Because it's not about you don't have a guy like Rasmus Sandin and hope he can be a third pairing guy for 2 or 3 years and then he moves on to St. Louis and then Columbus and then San Jose.
Right.
You've got plans 10 years top four. That's what you're working for. That's what you're working towards.
By the way, furthermore, Leafs Nation, the idea is to win the games, right? Like to get 2 points. It went from, oh, they got just smoked against Tampa. What the hell's going on? And then after the Detroit game, I'm walking around Collingwood, going into different places, gas station. Oh, fourth line was good, but everyone else stunk. I'm like, they won the game.
Yeah.
Like, what's some Herm nights, Edwards thing? You play to win the game?
And well, some nights, that's what you expect when your top two lines don't
that was
have
the bottom
that
six.
Night,
that was the bottom
expect.
Six bowl for both teams.
Nothing
at least
wrong with
won
that.
The game.
Nothing wrong with that.
I am a glass half full kind of guy when it comes to what we saw on Saturday night. Right. Because, Mitch Marner and John Tavares have been AWOL through six games. They have been gone. They have been non-existent. They have not done anything, quite frankly.
Right.
But they're going to snap out of it. They're too good.
Yeah.
This is not going to continue. They're not going to finish the season with 38 points.
No.
So take advantage of Timoshov winning you a game, of Mikheyev helping out to chip in points.
I like both of those guys, by the way. I think they're playing really good.
Right, which is great because
Mikheyev,
you're going to need them.
He's a good player.
They're not the ones that are going to be carrying you.
So what? You need them because the other guys carry it 85% of the time. Right. You need them 10 games a year to do that.
Exactly, and that's what happened on Saturday night.
They're a bonus. That's what they are, and that's what you
I'll
expect.
I'll take it.
But we see it. We saw it in the playoffs last year against the Boston Bruins. As much as Bergeron and Pasternak were factors, so was Sean Corrali. So was Nola Chari. Guys like that who were farther down in your lineup that would either gain you a little bit of momentum, get you a big goal here or there. That's what you're hoping out of some of these players to do as you progress along the season. So I was fine with it and watching the game. I'm like, yeah, great. If the top line didn't find the back of the net that night, no problem. The depth at least chipped in on a night where they just needed it. They needed
it. It's just a matter of time before Mitch Marner and John Tavares and Morgan Riley and Tyson Berry, they revert back to who they really are as players in terms of impact.
Right.
It's not going to happen every single night. And that's the thing about the Mitch Marner conversation. I'm sure he's probably fighting himself a lot right now.
Yeah.
Like he played the role, I wasn't paying attention. Now I wasn't on Instagram, I wasn't on Twitter, I didn't watch SportsCenter. I don't pay attention to that kind of stuff. I was up in Muskoka wakeboarding.
Not
it's not true.
No.
It wasn't true. It's not true. It was difficult for him. And he's still dealing with it because he's early into the season.
Yeah, it was the classic line in the Leaf dressing room. No newspapers in here, or news clippings, because it used to be like all the clippings from all the media. You know guys would grab them on the way as soon as they got in their truck.
Absolutely.
First stoplight.
But everyone knows. But they all, you can't avoid it.
They all have these.
They all have phones.
They all have Twitter. They all, even if they're an egg on Twitter, they have, like,
And they're all early 20s.
Right.
So they're on their phone all the time.
Exactly.
Just because you're in the NHL doesn't mean you're any different than the guy in university.
Right.
You're on your phone all the time.
And that's the thing. The information process now, it's not like, you know, if they're not listening to Overdrive podcasts, which they should, but let's just
subscribe
say
subscribe on
subscribe,
iTunes.
Subscribe. But they're going to get tidbits from the information process, either TSN 1050 tweets it out, somebody tweets it out. They'll find out who's saying what.
Right.
That's just, and even if they don't want to, it's going to come across. There's people that I don't want to hear from on Twitter, but somehow they find their way into my timeline because somebody retweets them or.
Leafs Lunch, I think, was talking about it last week, and Babcock is probably guilty of this more than anyone else. Babcock will go out of his way to say, I only listen to country radio in the truck. Yeah. I don't pay attention to you. But then when it's time for him to send a message, he'll come out and say, I heard what all you guys were saying, but I thought you weren't paying attention.
Yeah.
So Mitch Marner, he's the seventh highest paid guy in the league. It was a bit of a toxic negotiation publicly, privately, I'm sure.
Right.
And he's coming out of the gate and he's not playing that well. That's just a reality. But he's too good.
He's going to be fine.
He's going to be fine. He's going to get going. Tavares is going to get going. So take advantage of the guys further down the depth chart chipping away for you.
I had to rewatch the game today. And if I could give Mitch Marner any bit of advice, just like he's at his best when he simplifies and he just outworks everybody on the ice. Then he has the puck the whole night and nobody can get it off him. When he's back checking, forward checking. He's just a little bit too fancy right now, and I think you don't have to be a $10 million player every time you touch the puck.
Yeah.
That's just...
Well, you know what? You make a great point because, and this is such a, it's a bad analogy, but do you remember Mike Komisarek when he came here? Komisarek was a guy who blocked shots,
hit people in front of the net.
But he signed for $4.5 million, and all of a sudden he had to be on the power play, he had to do something. Mitch Marner can't play that way. Mitch Marner just needs to play how Mitch Marner's capable of playing. But sometimes like you say, he's going out and wanting to earn his paycheck every 5 seconds, every time he's on the ice. He will, just organically with his talent and his work ethic. He's a fantastic player. I was going to say fine player. He's a fantastic player, and he'll find his groove. He'll be fine. Same with John Tavares. They work hard. They're good pros, and they're too talented to not come out of it. It's just, I think sometimes players, I'm sure you were guilty of it. I know I was, where you get in your own head sometimes and you're trying to live up to everyone's expectations and that. The reason why they paid him $11 million is because they know what he's capable of. He'll be fine.
Well, and it's the timing. It's the first 6 games of the year.
Right.
If this happened in January, you'd be like, dog days, whatever. We'll find some positives.
Right.
And let's not forget about the big picture in terms of where this team is going. It is about April and May and June and trying to improve and get better as a team. And that factors into Rasmus Sandin and him being sent down today. Send him down, play him in every single situation, give him more responsibility. And I do think at some point he'll return.
Yeah.
And when he does return, he's going to play around the same minutes. He's not going to come up and knock Morgan Riley out, but he might be that much more matured, just battle-tested, and more prepared,
more confident. Like
more confident,
you
exactly.
You know what it's like? If you get a guy who's playing 25 minutes in the minors, they come up and they're playing with a ton of confidence. Right now, Sandin was just settling into the National Hockey League, a lot of the cadence that goes with it, and he's playing 12 minutes a night. Tough to get your game going when you're used to one thing. But if you go down and play 25 minutes a night in all situations, and then you come up, doesn't matter the minutes that you get, the minute you step on the ice, you'll be into a groove. I think it was a smart move by the organization. It's a low-impact move. Gravel's going to come up. That's why they signed Gravel. That's why they've got Harper. That's, you know, they've got players that they can interchange in case a guy like Sandin needed a little bit more season.
Yeah.
So that's what they're doing.
And I didn't think he was struggling.
No,
like, I didn't
awful.
See anything where I'm like, wow, he's fallen off.
No.
It's not like he was lighting the league on fire. And this is what Babcock said. I think it's a perfect explanation of the situation. I don't think you have to read into it too much further than this.
You can't get him. You can't get on the power play in front of the guys we got. Can't get on the penalty kill in front of the guys we got. So in the end, a real good night's 14 minutes. And we just think managing our assets and getting our team to be the best we can. We've done a real good job, we feel, as an organization developing players. And this is the best thing for his development. And in the meantime, you know, we got guys here that can play in those roles of the minutes that are allowed. So this gets him on the power play, on the penalty kill, in all situations defensively that he wasn't getting an opportunity with us.
Yeah, I think that...
Once again, great workout.
Very good workout on a
Glad
holiday Monday.
And you're panting. I love it.
That's
he ran around the rink.
He showed up on a holiday.
Exactly. Came to work today.
Came to work today, Mike Babcock.
Great workout.
Yep. The Leafs in action tomorrow night with Minnesota in town. Ray Ferraro will be calling that game tomorrow night. Ray will join us at 5 o'clock on a holiday Monday.
Yep.
Steve Phillips in about 20 minutes. Carlos Correa walks off last night in the 11th inning. Your boy, Jay Happ. Poor Jay Happ. There's another starter coming out of the bullpen. And
wasn't there an issue, like commercial break or something that happened?
Yeah, it was... They didn't get back from break on time.
I mean,
that's a big not get back.
It's a pretty big miss.
But we're not going to get into slinging mud. And,
no,
but
that's not.
We don't dig that
on our
deep.
Network, so that's why.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah.
But it was tough timing. I mean, someone clearly didn't time it out properly.
I know, but it
was a miss.
I've been around. I mean, you hear the producers in your ear. Can you imagine? Like, that's a big moment.
No, it's get back to the game.
Well, here's the thing. People in the industry should know better than casting stones in those situations.
Because we've all been involved.
We've all been there, and I've heard other guys on the other side of it throw jabs at us when it happens to us, and they should know better. So, you know, because I feel for whoever was in charge of that, because you know they're freaking out.
Well,
because
not
if
much
you're
you can
watching
do.
The game,
like, you go to a commercial. Those are time.
And the timing was off. Clearly,
it happens.
Because
it happens.
Fox was like, "We're coming back," and the pitch is coming in, and Correa walks off. It got back just in time. To see basically the connection and the ball exit and the game end. But
so, you know what? It's great. It's great.
In that situation, you want to see everything leading up.
You want to see.
Yes.
But ultimately, you watch the highlights. A million times, you know, you saw how it went down, and I don't think it robbed you of the live experience because you saw it just as it went out. But there was
it's a shock. Like it comes back, and you're like, "Whoa, it's over!" Like is that a replay of a game from August or something?
But it was he.
But Correa
crushed that.
He crushed it opposite field, and he pimped it, man. Like what I want to know.
Whole way. Like is that? But that's not because of that scenario. Like it wasn't a bat flip, but he turned and he, you know, there was a lot of showboating.
There's a lot of emotion there, though,
which is wrong.
Winning home run. I mean, you are jacked up.
But he won't get beaned for that.
Not in the playoffs. You can't afford to do that. I wouldn't be shocked if the Yankees look to get him back, maybe next year. That's what happened with Bautista. Like Bautista, now that was Game 5. The series was over.
Bat flip, yeah.
But the next year was the Rougned Odor punch. That was in 16.
Yeah.
And Texas remembered, and they were like, they beamed him.
He did a victory lap with the number one.
And I love that. I have no problem with that type of personality. What I'm looking for is consistency out of the Goose Gossage types who were in an ICU for 2 weeks after Bautista bat flipped, and there was this big referendum about how disrespectful it was and how inappropriate.
Every game now.
But that one, to me, was way more extreme than the bat flip.
He turned to the dugout, and there was he wasn't even running. He was just standing there, turning to the dugout.
And then he does the Hulk Hogan ear flap, and then he shoots his helmet at home plate like it's a free throw.
Hey, no.
Like, that was way more extreme than Bautista.
Yeah, but...
Like, look at Correa right now.
Yeah, it was quite impressive.
Now, it's a walk-off. Like, Bautista was still in the seventh inning, and there were still outs, and...
But the thing is, Bautista, because he was so jacked up, that bat flew 30 feet in the air.
He threw it up like it was a skittle.
Exactly. Like, he launched that thing.
And today is the four-year anniversary of the bat flip.
Really?
Today is the four-year anniversary. And both of them were no doubters, man. Like, we were all in the building for the Bautista. Now, Bautista didn't move either off the bat.
But
he stayed in the box.
That bat, like, if they did a libero on that bat went 30 feet in the air.
I got to say, we're going to do a confirm or deny later. And this is going to come up. And maybe we're going to spoil it here. I think that would be the most gratifying achievement in pro sports that I can think of.
A walk-off home run?
In team sports. Yeah, like a monster, no doubt, bomb at home in the playoffs. Because it's only you. Like, you can score an OT winner, but someone probably got it to you.
Unless you went end-to-end, yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, okay. But like Borshevsky, think about that. He tipped it in. Great goal. But someone had to get it to you. You tipped it in.
You remember Borshevsky, though. You remember the name.
You do.
Like that Kirk Gibson home run.
He strutted that one. You remember?
Oh, yeah.
He was on one leg.
One leg. But at home, a no-doubter? Like that building, Minute Maid Park, it exploded off the bat. And the same thing with the Dome when we were down there in Game 5.
Yeah.
It's like the ultimate bar play afterwards.
So you're thinking that's single-handedly the most gratifying pro sports moment.
I think so. In team sports.
Like
individual sports might be a little bit different. You hit a massive putt to win a major or something like that. I don't know.
So team sports, you're right. Like soccer would be penalty kicks, maybe.
Yeah, but even that...
You should score on a penalty.
You should kind of score, you know. In hockey and basketball, you hit a winning shot. Like Kawhi's winning shot would be really cool.
The Philly Kawhi shot.
Yeah. But
him.
I don't know. I just feel like in a stadium like that, baseball stadiums are so much bigger. There's an extra 15,000, 20,000 people. It's only you up there. Like, you're the only representative of your team.
You controlled the outcome of the game right there.
Right.
You ended it.
And off your bat, the adrenaline rush that would come with a no-doubter off your bat, I think it would be the coolest moment.
You can do
whatever
you want. Whatever cell you want. Like, you deserve it.
I thought the helmet I thought that was actually quite unique. You know?
The free throw helmet at the plate was great.
It was pretty cool.
Now, imagine it knocks someone in the head.
I was just
going
to say, if you're not paying attention though, and you get
Verlander
the helmet in the head, that's the thing where celebrations. Wasn't it Jason Arnott who jumped into the glass and got piled on and had a concussion in Nashville I think he took him out of the series. He scored in overtime, jumped in the glass.
Who was
got
the Italian kicker for Tampa Bay?
Yeah, Gramatica.
He jumped in the air and blew his knee out after kicking a field goal.
You see that? I think there was a CFL guy who did that too.
Oh, yeah. He spiked it on the ground and hit himself right in the pills.
Yeah, and then gets and pushed over. That's one of the great videos of all time.
I think the defender gave him the push, right?
He's trying to hot dog the defender hey, nah, 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 I just scored a touchdown. And he bags himself and then gets pushed over.
There's a fine line because if somebody gets hurt in one of those celebrations, man, you got a lot of explaining to do.
I think it was Kendrys Morales who blew out his knee at home plate after a walk-off home run.
Like what? Piling on him?
He tried to get through, and he did the big jump and landed and blew his knee out.
That's
right at the plate. How'd you get stretchered off after a walk-off home run?
That's tough, man.
Imagine the nurse is prepping you that night. So what are you here for? Yeah. I hit a walk-off home run and blew my knee out.
What about the uncomfortable exchange with the skip? Like he says, hey, what's up with you? Yeah. Well, when I hit that homer, I kind of jumped in the air and I blew my knee out when I landed.
Yeah. That's tough.
I'm going on the injured list for a while there, Skip.
Oh, that's true. There have been some funny injuries, but yeah. All of those guys came back.
Those are tough. Someone texting in, David Beckham, his free kick to punch their ticket into the Euros, better than the home run. I remember that. That was against Greece at Old Trafford. It's a great YouTube clip. You got to look it up. It's spectacular. It's like the 93rd minute. John Moxon had the call. He was like one of the all-time great, just grizzled British soccer broadcasters. Grab that call, actually, Steve, and we'll play that at some point. It's a great call. But I'm going with home run.
Yeah, I don't.
The most gratifying individual moment
there
possible.
Is gonna be
I got to disagree. I scored an OT winner against Cujo in the Air Canada Center. That was pretty cool. Unfortunately, I was with Carolina.
That was you. Like, how did that puck arrive at you? Do you remember the play?
Oh, yeah. Ronnie Francis carried it over the blue line and kicked it around and bobbled it around. And then it came right to my stick. And I just was like, this has got to go under the bar.
Because he, you know, him coming across.
Yeah.
Be down.
And it was just under the bar and in.
Yeah, top cheese OT winner would probably be.
I mean, that would be high on the list. And that's your own personal
You're not familiar
experience.
With that because you don't know what that experience is.
Yeah, thank you. Have you ever hit a home run, like a walk-off home run? Yeah,
no,
but you're just as big of a loser as I am when it comes to baseball.
No, but have you ever done the other thing, though?
Yeah, and like minor hockey, absolutely.
Not the same.
A lot of people in the stands, big tournament.
That goal, that's the hard part. You know, in lower leagues, giving up like an OT win or something. It's so heartbreaking.
Well, the goalie like can't have that moment.
I can go back, and I saw it, and it came to mind the other day. The Vancouver Canucks. I don't know if you that opening ceremonies. If you watched it, I thought it was fantastic to have the old players come out. Kirk McLean skated out, and I don't know if you remember the Kirk McLean right pad save, two pad stack. I think it was on Bure or no, yeah. It was on Bure. It wasn't on Bure.
It was in 94
against the Calgary Flames. And it was like this fantastic two-pad stack. And all I think of, Kirk McLean's career, I think, was fantastic. But that save, like sometimes there's a goaltender that has a save that you remember.
Yeah, you're right.
But at some point, someone had to score the winner. It's not the winner. Like, that's the only thing I can think of that was gratifying for some of the goalies I grew up watching and stuff is remembering, like, Some goalies are known for, like, the one save.
Right.
And vice versa. Toskala is known for that 176-footer.
There'd be a ton of them. And it's like closers in baseball.
Right.
Like, they would have so many countless examples of when they closed the door.
Yeah, like just.
And it would be a big moment, but it couldn't match a teammate hitting a walk-off home run.
Right.
You know, it's like, well, you were expected to do that.
Right.
He wasn't expected to hit that home run.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, it's the same thing. The goalie, you're supposed to stop that puck, which is unfair because you still have to go out there and do it. And if it's a guy like Mark Messier coming down on you, you should get full credit.
Stéphane Matteau is still a god with the Rangers, but from scoring from behind the net on Marty
Brodeur.
Yeah, like
a greasy wraparound.
Yeah. Like that defined his career.
Absolutely. He probably has speaking engagements.
Yeah, because of it.
Yeah, for sure he will.
Paul Henderson.
Henderson, biggest goal in Canadian hockey history. Not even in the Hall of Fame.
That's what somebody sent us a note the other day saying he needs to be in the Hall of Fame.
That's always been a debate.
It is a huge debate.
Big time debate. Yeah. All right, Steve Phillips coming up. Marcellus Wiley in about an hour. You got Ray Ferraro on the show today. We might get to some confirm or deny. All this week, we are going to announce a player of the day, a Raptor champion player of the day, and you're gonna have to hear all five players because on Friday we're gonna give away a pair of tickets to opening night. So it's basically like our player of the day with Leaf tickets, only this is for Raptors tickets. So every day we're gonna announce one Raptor player. You've got to hear all five, and on Friday when we give you the cue to call, you could be going to see the banner being raised an opening night next week. So we'll do that at some point this afternoon and every day this week. It is Thanksgiving. We're all in here. Happy Thanksgiving, boys, and everyone out there listening.
Well.
Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, we have a pair of tickets to give away this week. Leafs taking on Patrick Marleau and the San Jose Sharks Friday, October 25th. So every day this week, we will provide you with the clue to the identity of a current or ex-Maple Leaf player, and on Friday you have the chance to call in and name that Leaf. Today's clue. This former Maple Leaf started his NHL career in the 1980s with a team in the Eastern Conference.
Wow.
Okay. Very vague.
Yeah,
I like
very
that.
Vague.
That's a Monday type of clue.
It's a garbage clue.
Yeah. Well, it's just to kind of get the ball rolling a little bit.
Started his career in the 80s with
on
an
a
Eastern Conference team.
In the Eastern Conference. Yeah. Get on HockeyDB and figure that one out.
Mike Krushelnicki. Although I think he started with the Oilers.
I think he started in Edmonton, yeah.
Then went to L.A.
He was tough for like a...
Third, fourth line guy, plugging along.
Tough, long range. I saw him at the airport, actually.
He started in the Eastern Conference.
In the 1980s. So it could be anybody. You'll have to tune in the rest of the week to figure this one out.
That's a Thanksgiving mail.
Joel Quenneville. Did Q ever play for the Leafs?
No, he played for St. John's.
I played against him in the minors.
Yeah, I don't know if he ever made it. He might have made it as a Maple Leaf. Yeah. I think he really got going, though, in Hartford, obviously.
Right.
He just grew a mustache and immediately got traded to Hartford.
Right. That's where all the mustaches.
Tim Tippett and Ray and
there are a bunch McDermott. Of them.
Yeah, they all had mustaches.
Yeah.
Babich, yeah. They
Kevin
all had
Dineen ever growing down there?
No, I don't think
probably
I don't
couldn't.
He did. I wish we could get Goose Gossage on. I want to know how offended he was by Correa's celebration last night. And if he was more offended by the Correa pimping of that home run last night or the bat flip 4 years ago today by Bautista down at the Rogers Center, both of which would send old Goosey Gossage.
I think the bat flip. Now, Correa just extended it. He had the number one right around the bases.
Yeah. The Hulkster ear grab.
Yeah, actually,
that's aggressive,
that
man.
That was a three-pack, what he did yesterday.
And then he threw the free throw helmet right at the end. Here's Steve Phillips, our TSN 1050 MLB analyst. Put on your old school, just cranky hat for us. Which celebration bothered you more?
Oh, I think that Gossage would absolutely go after the Correa issue because you're right. It's three pronged. I mean, it's you know, he's got a little bit of everything in there, and Goose, you know, the idea. One of those guys hits a home run against me and acts like that. I'm going to throw at him the next time around. They don't do that stuff to me. In the old days, we used to settle that stuff. There's no way. The first time that guy comes up the bat next time, we drill him right between the numbers on the back of his uniform. He'll never do that again if I'm pitching. How's that? Get off my front lawn.
That's pretty good. I like that.
Not too bad.
That stuff's gone, though. I know the old school guys, but you watch baseball on a regular basis. There's a bat flip every game now. Like, a guy is a big homer. It's just kind of part of the game.
Well, Acuna pimped a single in the NLDS.
That's true. He did.
He did. You know, and it goes back. Listen, Ricky Henderson did that with us when I was with the Mets. I mean, Ricky, you know, he always used to, if he hit one, he'd sort of pick at his shirt, and then he'd skip and then start to trot to first base, and he'd tuck the shoulder around in the bases. And so he went into one of those with us, Ricky did. And sure enough, he rounded first, and as he's rounded first, he looks up, and the relay throw is coming in from left field to second base. He turns around, and Ricky was like he was in full-blown stolen base mode, coming back in to dive into first base. And the next day, Robin Ventura, you know, at the old Shea Stadium, they had a seat marked way up in left field with a number 8 on it that Tommy Agee hit, supposedly the longest home run ever at Shea Stadium. Well, the next day, Robin Ventura put tape on the left field wall, spelling out the number 24. And when Ricky came out, they said, Ricky, hey, listen, you've got the longest single in Mets history. They've marked it with your number on the wall right there. So, the celebrations have been around for a while, but certainly Correa, he went full blown all out with it. And it's, he had a big walk off hit back in the 2017 against the Yankees, in the same series, in the championship series. And he's had some practice at this. And so the better you are, the more chances you get to sort of celebrate.
I'm not surprised by what we saw last night, especially going into the 11th inning. But the Yankees had 9 different pitchers on the mound. You talk about old school guys losing their minds.
Oh, yeah.
That would be topic number one.
Well, the starter came out in what, the fourth or fifth?
He came out in the third. Paxton only got through two and a third.
And then
Green came in and was rolling. But clearly Boone made up his mind. We're going to make some adjustments here. But another example of a starter coming in out of the bullpen and getting rocked. Is this something we should be more focused on around baseball, or is this just inevitable and it's going to happen? And, you know, Hap played the role of Kershaw last night, and so be it.
Yeah, so in the regular season, they would not have taken Paxton out because he got rocked, but they only gave up one run.
Right.
He got into trouble a couple times, and they finally thought, you know what, enough's enough, and they got him out. And you know, the way managers are managing guys other than aces is that they tend to want to take them out before they get in trouble rather than once they get in trouble. And it used to be that's what a manager would do. His starter would go until he got in trouble, then you go to the bullpen. Now what managers do is they let him pitch, and then before he gets in trouble, they're like, okay, let me make a change here because I anticipate trouble is coming. Now with Paxton, it happened earlier than they would have liked. They wanted to get five, maybe six innings out of him. But because he was getting in so much trouble, you know, Boone looked at it and said, listen, off day, travel day after the game yesterday. So today being off, I can go to my bullpen. I can burn him out. I've got a day to recover, and then I can bring him back in to go for game three back in Yankee Stadium. So he went early to the pen, and he knew that you know, he played his card early. He had the depth to be able to get through the rest of the game, but because it was still tied and it went extras, they got to the point where the Astros look at it and have to believe, when we get to Jay Happ, right now, we have matchup advantages because he's a left-hander that throws a lot of fastballs, you know, with all of the right-handed bats, and you start going through with Gurriel and Altuve and Bregman and obviously Correa, and you know, the guys that they have there. There's a real advantage when they get to Happ just because of this, the you know, the situations they present themselves, and it cost the Yankees. But I, here's the thing, I would have taken out Paxton when he did. He took Green out when he was rolling to bring in Ottavino to pitch to Springer, because Springer had faced Ottavino four times and struck out three times. That's not a real, it's not a lot of information right there. And Ottavino hung a slider to Springer to hit the home run to tie the game. But then he went, you know, to Canely, who's got the changeup to get the left-handers and the right-handers out. And so he went through it and look at it at a 2-2 tie in the 11th. But they just ran out of good fortune.
So if you're New York, you light up game one, you feel good about yourself. You lose game two, and Verlander, he was on a mound doing what he generally does, although he wasn't necessarily the difference because it went 11 innings. But now you're looking at Gerrit Cole in game three and game seven, and Verlander again back in game six. So you're going to have to beat them at least once. Do you feel like you can do that? Do you feel like you can get a win off Cole or Verlander over the next, you know, five games?
Yeah, I think they look at it and think they can. And here's the thing. I think ideally the Yankees' best chance of winning the series is winning it in five, right? Versus, you know, going to game six and seven back in Houston where they're lined up with Verlander in six and Cole in seven. And so that means that, you know, they had to win one of the Verlander or Cole first starts. They had a shot yesterday in game two, and they're going to go into game three with Severino on the mound, and Severino doesn't have to match Cole. What they have to do is they've got to get Cole out of the game. And so they've got to work the count and take away the efficiency of his outing so that, you know, he throws a lot of pitches, they get him out. If you can't beat a guy, then just get him out of the game. And the way you do it is you work the count. Now, the thing about Cole is he just pounds the strike zone. But you know, they absolutely, you know, can keep it close. And you know, Severino could match Cole early, but he's not going to go as deep into the game. But the Yankees' bullpen's going to be fresh, day off. They're going to be ready to go. And so, yeah, if the Yankees can steal that Cole game, then they have, you know, Urquidy, the number four starter, who is very hittable. And then Greinke in a game five at Yankee Stadium, which I do not like from the Astros' perspective at all. But there's a good chance that even if Cole wins tomorrow, that the Yankees win game three and four, games four and five, and they're up 3-2 going back to Houston, having to beat Cole or Verlander one of those games in Houston.
With Steve Phillips, our MLB analyst. So a story that was broken, I guess, over the weekend was that Ross Atkins was secretly extended by the Blue Jays through 2021. And that lines up with Charlie Montoyo. And now the belief is, according to Ken Rosenthal, that Mark Shapiro is not far behind him. And Shapiro is going to get locked in at some point and be here for at least the next couple of years. You know how these two are perceived in Toronto. I'm talking about Shapiro and Atkins. It's a pretty low approval rate. But I'm not surprised that ownership would do this, because clearly they bought into whatever plan they were selling, that they were going to unload everything, they were going to start from scratch, they were going to dump money, they were going to load up on prospects, load up on picks, and the second phase would be bringing the kids up, shrewd trades, hopefully find some money for some signings, and if you committed to phase one, this would ultimately be committing to phase two. Is that how you see it?
I do, yeah. I think that you know, rebuilding is a process, you know, I think that when you think about what did they promise ownership the rebuilding would look like, and it would be that at some point we're going to have a core of young players coming up that are exciting, that fans will get excited about, that we can look forward to building around for the future, and then we're going to start to fill in around those guys some of the other pieces. You know, that's kind of what has happened with it. Now, you know, the expectations, I think, are different from the fans than they are necessarily from the owners right now. The owners do want to win, but they understand that it's a process to get there. And I'm sure they were sold with the fact that it's going to take some time. There's going to be some dark days. We're going to lose some fan base coming out, and tickets and attendance and numbers and all of that. We just have to stick to the plan and keep moving forward, and then not rush it, but let it sort of be organically grown from the ground up. And ownership's bought into it, and they're excited about, you know, Bo Bichette and Vlad Jr. and Gurriel and Biggio and with Pearson coming, and, you know, with Jansen behind the plate, and so they're looking at it thinking, all right, listen, what these guys promised us, they're kind of delivering, because here's that core. Now, what will they be when they turn into winners? You know, that part remains to be seen, because there's a lot of ground to cover between where they are now and winning a championship, and there's places where it can stall out, where it can come up short, where they might not have all the pieces. But at least at this early part of it, the genesis of it, they're in a pretty good place.
All right, Steve, enjoy the game tonight, man. We'll do it again later in the week.
You bet, guys. My pleasure, always.
There's Steve Phillips, our TSN 1050 MLB analyst. Yeah, Simmons wrote that yesterday, that Atkins, the under kinda, the radar extension.
I was just
going to
say, that's a...
I didn't see any press release come up.
Friday, yeah, like a Friday... 5 o'clock.
Not even. It's you go dig it up, and if you can find it, good for you.
Yeah.
But Atkins reportedly is here through 2021.
That is crazy, man. To take over a team and just gut it and start a rebuild, and then you're getting extensions.
But that's what they pitched.
But that's what they wanted.
I get it. Like, I know. But it's like to sit down and say, man, you've done such a. Really? You ripped apart the team and gutted it. And I know that's what you wanted to do and you have to do,
mm-hmm.
But to almost get the sense of rewarding that, it seems nuts almost.
To me...
Not nuts, but it's just a weird dynamic.
Your plan should run as long as your contract. So the fact that they extended, like, that's the thing that is interesting for me.
I think... The way around that would have been to extend them like 2 years ago.
That's what I'm saying.
And been like, we're going to give you a 5-year deal.
Here's your window.
Here's your 5 years, because we know it's going to take two and a half, three to right. Just hit rock bottom. And then you've got a year or two where you better at the end of it have 90 wins in the win column.
Guaranteed. That's what was laid out to them.
Absolutely. Whether you like it, dislike it, approve of it, disapprove of it, that's what happened here. Shapiro and Atkins went to ownership and said, you need to give us money to get rid of Tua Lewicki, Russell right. Martin, Kendrys Morales. We're going to have no payroll for a couple of years.
Right.
We're going to be awful. We're going to bring the kids up. We're going to trade Stroman. We're going to trade Sanchez. Right. All that stuff was laid out.
Right.
And then we're going to go out there and make shrewd trades.
Right.
Then we need some money for signings. This has been the pitch since day one. Whether it's going to work or not is a completely different story.
So if that was the pitch, the only thing I could say... or C, is they took, you know, whatever, a 3-year deal and said, okay, we'll revisit it after three. And, okay, are we sticking to the plan? Okay, here's another, whatever, three or more.
That's right.
To turn this around. But it's a gamble on both sides.
Oh, for sure, man. Now you're trusting the guys who blew it up to build it back up. Those are two very different situations.
Right.
A lot of people that can blow things up.
Exactly.
You know, you give me money, I can walk in and say, Tua Lewicki, you're done.
Yeah.
That's easy to do. Russell Martin, we're going to pay 80% of your contract. You're going to L.A.
There was a ton spent on that.
Oh, yeah. That's easy to do.
Yeah.
But can you draft properly? Can you find hidden gems out there in free agency?
Build it back up and build a winner. That's the challenge.
Let's see what you got now.
Yeah.
And the court of public opinion, clearly we know what the verdict is. It's not overly optimistic.
Well, you're only halfway through. Now, I'm sure, in defense of them, I'm sure Masai took some bullets along the way.
Oh, yeah.
Because
there
were times where I felt, anyways, from just listening to this market, that Masai was on his last legs.
Couldn't get over the top.
Right. There's a team you can't win. LeBron's here. Hey, it's great.
Yep.
Perennial playoff team, but can't get out of the first round, can't get here.
Well, and then when you win. With one guy.
Yeah, but he did it. He went out and got that one.
That's what I'm saying, though.
And now he's unanimously loved.
He bought himself a lifetime, but for a while there, he was under the gun.
Absolutely. Ray Ferraro in about 20 minutes. Marcellus Wiley at 5:30. A lot to get into from the NFL. And a big Monday nighter tonight at Lambeau. Packers, 4-point favorites over the Detroit Lions. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Ray Ferraro coming up in about 15 minutes. Marcellus Wiley, there's a lot to get into from the NFL.
Dallas Cowboys, very funny.
Well, the Jets did their best, but they still won.
What do we do now?
That was embarrassing.
Well, you jammed us up big time yesterday. I mean, you sewered me when I was apparently the problem, the original survivor pool. You had to pick two games yesterday, and you picked Baltimore and Dallas, and we're out. We're back in the round two of the loser survivor pool, and we're already out.
You guys are out again?
Yeah.
Who did you take?
Talk to him. What did I text you? I'm like, you're the guy making the picks. You're the captain.
And you took Dallas?
I didn't take Dallas.
He took Dallas.
He took Dallas. That's I would have taken the Jets.
No, you wouldn't.
I would have gone Baltimore and New York.
No, Cowboys, Ravens, and then I get thumbs up from Brian Hayes. That's
It was your picks. I wasn't going to argue with you.
And you know what? I'm an idiot because I wanted Chargers, too.
But it didn't matter. They lost, too.
I know.
What was the spread?
It was like 7.
You
Dallas
wouldn't have taken
doesn't
the
matter.
Jets.
No, I know. I'm kidding about that. But, no, it really didn't matter. Like, I'll bet you half that pool is out because Kansas City lost yesterday, too.
This Mahomes is coming back down to earth.
All of a sudden, he's not the greatest player in the history of pro sports.
Exactly. People have cooled off on that.
Yeah. Throw a couple picks, lose a couple fumbles. No. Although Baker Mayfield, man, I am going to have to address that at 5:30. Well,
Freddie Cousins.
Freddie Kitchens.
Sorry, Cousins Kitchens.
Freddie Kitchens, man, is a mess on the sideline. He's really having a problem on the sidelines. Like, I'm worried about his health. It's bad.
He has got a furnace face going on the side. Like, I'm sorry, don't we get to a point where Baker Mayfield, you're just not a good NFL quarterback?
I'm worried that he just really isn't that good. Yeah. Like, I love this swagger. I was on board with it. The way he played in the second
half. You know in the movies, like, they peel off their face? I'm waiting for him to peel off their face, and it's Johnny Manziel. He's like, I haven't left.
Well, he's worse than Manziel was, in a way.
It's a disaster.
I saw this on ESPN Stats and Info. This is how bad it's been for Baker Mayfield early in the season. The Browns, they've gone through like 25 quarterbacks in the past 20 years.
Dude, there's an infamous picture in Cleveland of a guy that's got it in a store, and it's got everyone's name crossed out, and it's like 25 names.
Every three or four games, there was a new quarterback showing up. So he was supposed to be the savior. Mayfield has 11 interceptions through six games. The most by a Browns quarterback through six games since Paul McDonald had 12 in 1984.
Wow.
This guy is putting up worse numbers and throwing more pizzas than any other garbage quarterback Cleveland has had since 1984. That's how bad it is for Baker Mayfield.
The only thing I didn't hear the cockiness, the hero comments, though.
Well, he's blaming the refs now.
Wow.
The officiating. Terrible officiating. Baker, you can't be blaming other people when you're throwing three picks in a game. And you had that game. You had a chance to win that game.
Yeah.
It's not good for him.
No.
Not good, right?
Not good. Not good.
So Marcellus Wiley at 5:30. Big game tonight. We'll tee that up as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.